We're doing the Navi Yeshayahu, and we're up to what's called the 32nd chapter, the 7th Pasuk. The Navi had been describing, we see in Pasuk Vav, Ki Naval Nevalai Daber, speaks about the Naval, the person who is not God-fearing, he is dishonest, and he speaks inappropriately, and his heart is constantly thinking how to swindle other people. He speaks improperly about his Creator, and he's willing to take food from the hungry and drink from the thirsty. Pasuk Zayin v'chilai kelav ra'im. And this swindler, his tools of deceit are evil. Hu zimot ya'atz. He's constantly plotting. L'chabel aniyim be'imrei sheker. He thinks about how to harm the poor with his lies. And even when the poor speak in the name of justice and they try to do what's right, he tries to swindle them. It's interesting that till today, the people who are most taken advantage of are the poor. They have a hard time taking suing a person. You have whole industries who try to exploit the poor. We'll take a simple example. You have more lottery. You have more places that sell lottery tickets in poor areas than in more affluent areas. When people have given up on life, so then who knows, maybe I'll make $1 million. Do you know there are greater odds you'll be hit by a car than that you'll make the money, yet you cross the street? Every time you cross the street, there are greater odds of being hit by a car than winning the lottery. But who knows, right?
So you're saying that the reason why these low people, these criminals or whatever, these low people in Yeshayim, the reason why they're targeting the poor is because for exploitative purposes.
Correct.
They think that they can exploit the poor's, I don't know, their weaker position to get all sorts of stuff from them.
Well, the poor also find it more difficult. You know, if let's say your cell phone company cheated you, so if you have a battery of lawyers, you call them up and say, look, you want to give me the money? Fine. You don't want to give me the money? I'll sue you. But if you're the guy in the street, so what threat are you to them? If they want to exploit you, they can exploit you.
We don't want to. That's why I talk about it. People are more vulnerable.
You don't have the time to fight back. You know how many times I've been cheated and I just don't, it's not, I don't have the time. You need the time. You need the time. You need the capacity.
So saying like these novel people, saying that they want to rip everyone off.
Correct.
But the poor people are easier targets.
Correct. V'nadiv, nedivot, ya'atz, pasuk chet. But a person who is nadiv, he's a philanthropist. He wants to be generous. Nedivot, ya'atz, he thinks about how to help other people, how to donate to other people. V'hu al nedivot, yakum. And he, whenever he finds an opportunity to donate, he stands. He doesn't just walk by it. So that he's showing us two types of people. You have a person whose thoughts are constantly focused on how to cheat other people. Then you have a person whose thoughts are constantly how to help other people. And so he's always thinking, and he won't let an opportunity pass him by without taking advantage of it as an opportunity to help other people. So, if we go back for a second, in Pasuk Hey, the Navi began this thought. He said in Pasuk Hey, Lo yikarei od lenaval nadiv. They will no longer, when we have a time that things are rectified, either in the days of Mashiach or in the days of Chizkiyahu, people will no longer give the naval, the swindler, they will no longer give him the name of nadiv, philanthropist, donor, generous. Because ulechilai, and a person who is stingy, they will no longer call him shoah, a person who just gives. He's happy to give others. He's saying when there's corruption in the leadership, so it seeps through and through, and then even the worst of people gets called the best of names. And he says that's not true. Ki naval, let me describe to you what a swindler's like, and that's why he doesn't deserve the title of nadiv. That's what we just read, the description of what is a naval and what is a nadiv. And he says, we will no longer be calling the naval a nadiv. These are the descriptions. Nashim shananot, you women who are so tranquil, komina shemana koli, arise and hear my voice. Banot bo'otichot ha'azeina imrati, girls who are so confident, listen to what I'm warning you. And we'll first read this simply. He's warning them of the great danger when Jerusalem will be overtaken by Sanherib, so the women will all be violated. It says in the description of the destruction of the Second Temple that they amassed so many virgins, there was a stream of blood next to Jerusalem. So the Navi is talking to the women and he's saying, you're living such tranquil lives. Listen here, you're in danger. That's the simple reading, and we will revisit the pasuk in a few minutes to see what our sages told us about this pasuk. Yamim al shana tirgaz nabotichot, year after year, he says, days will come, it'll be just a year's time, when all you women who have such confidence and peace, you will suddenly not have that confidence and peace. Tirgazna, you will be disturbed, botichot, women who are confident. Ki kala vatzir osef bili yavo, because the harvest will end and yet there'll be nothing to bring into the house. Remember their economy. You had the rainy season, then you had the dry season, and the dry season you harvested, and what you harvested that year was what you ate the next year. So if the harvest ends and the enemy's been attacking and taking all your food, so then the harvest has ended and you realize, I have no food for the next 6 months, and there's no place to get food. So he's warning them. Now, a woman in their society was in an interesting predicament. On the one hand, she had to work very, very hard to support and help her husband. On the other hand, she was contingent on her husband. Meaning, if he brought food home, she had food. If he didn't bring food home, what's she going to do? Go run the field? Go plow? Go plant? What could she do? So if when you have a society that revolves around the agriculture, women will play the supportive role, but they're not going to be able to lead the cows and plow and plant. And they're very contingent on their husband. So when things are going good, they're very confident. Life is peaceful. Life is tranquil. He's warning them. He's saying, wait, a year from now, there will be you'll be concluding the harvest and you'll have nothing at home. Yes. The Beit HaMikdash is called Devir Kocheno. The word Devir can mean speech, Dibur. Rashi in one place says it was called Devir Shemishama Dibur Yotze. So you can understand that to mean that that's where prophecy emanated from. But we have sources that say that the first place a prophet would give his prophecy is in the temple. And the temple would have, the high court of the temple would verify. And when they would verify, so they would give him a license. They would say, he has been verified to be a prophet. He is given license to give over his prophecy. So that's what we discussed last night, that the high court would study every form of magic. Someone asked, am I allowed to go hear a sermon from a priest to inspire me? So we discussed the Talmud in Tractate Shabbos that says a person who learns even the simplest thing from a magosh, which includes any type of apostate, including a priest, is deserving of the death penalty. You can't go and do that. But then the Talmud says they would go to them and learn from them their tactics, meaning they would apprentice, the rabbis of the high court would apprentice by all the different types of magicians and sorcerers, and until they had mastered all their tricks and shenanigans, so that when a prophet would come and they interviewed him and they checked whether he was bona fide, they would be masters of all the tricks. Like the Mishnah in Kalim says, they knew every type of dishonest means that people would use to smuggle goods, because they had to rule on the items. Are they defiled? Are they not defiled? You look at a cane, you think it's a slab of wood. They looked at a cane and they said, well, it depends. If you're smuggling money in the cane and it's hollow on the inside, so then it's a vessel. If the cane is really one slab of wood, okay, so then it's a slab of wood. So then So the Mishnah actually discusses how they studied and they knew this. So when a prophet came and gave these prophecies, it was after he was interviewed by a board that was masters of every type of magic and sorcery and sleight of hand. They had studied it and they knew it. The Talmud says this, Rabbi Akiva, even after the destruction of the temple, was studying under Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer taught him 3,000 ways, 3,000 ways that a witch can make a garden appear. I know how to do this in 5 ways. He knew 3,000.
You know?
Yeah.
What?
Right.
Where'd you learn that?
But once the prophet, once the prophet has been verified, so my question is, if it's a rigorous procedure, and that it's accepted, and Sibur accepts that he's been verified, then how come no one listens? What happened that they wouldn't listen to the warning?
So part of it is human nature. There's a Hasidish Vort says about Yosef that he was so smart. So Rabbi Tendler once quoted this. Why do we say Yosef was so smart? Why was Pharaoh and his men, why were they so taken by Yosef's wisdom? Because Yosef said, "Ve'ata yeref Pharaoh ish navon v'chacham v'shiteo al eretz Mitzrayim." Pharaoh appoints someone really smart in charge of Egypt to figure out how to tax the people and prepare storage houses so there'll be food for the years of famine. So Yosef's wisdom was in understanding the way the human mind works. When the market crashes, so most people don't buy. Most people think if it went down, it's only going to keep going down. And then when the market goes up, that's when most people buy. So people think if it's going up, it'll always go up. And that's why most people buy high and sell low. So, you know, sounds simple. Buy low and sell high and you'll make money, right? It's that simple. Then why doesn't everyone do it? Because the nature of man is that what we see now is what we envision will be tomorrow. We have a very hard time perceiving that something will change. So the first difficulty that a Navi has to overcome is that component of human nature. Look at Jabotinsky. You go and you yell and you go and you warn. And even after there were testimonies from the camps, people had a hard time believing. Who could believe that Poland would fall? The fact that they took down Poland in one day, who would have believed that? I understand how they did it, but I'm saying, but did the people of Poland believe that? They didn't believe it. I'm saying, so that was the first challenge. What? He's not a prophet, but if someone comes and tells you the Nazis are killing Jews, they're putting them in ghettos, they're persecuting them, get out of here. How many people were willing to listen? I'm saying, so the first problem you have is that people have a complacency and a desire to believe that what they know is what will continue, and to change is hard. The second issue is that you're fighting with human nature on another front. People liked their lives. The Talmud says people would meet in the market and they'd compare notes. What type of woman did you sleep with today? Meaning they had a life when you were on the top, the upper echelons. So the leadership was so corrupt that they'd be standing in the marketplace comparing what color, what size. The Talmud quotes their discussions, their conversations.
So you're saying that stuff doesn't go on anymore?
We weren't discussing today at all. We were discussing what happened then. Why was it difficult to listen to the prophet? So I think that when you lead a life that people had material pleasures and the prophet is telling them it'll all disappear, you're going to be destroyed. Who wanted to listen to that?
Kill the prophets easier.
That's another point. They had the false prophets who kept promising them things would be good, so that makes it even easier. I have my prophet. You know, Pasuk Yud. Yamim al shana tirgaz nabo techot. In a year's time, you who have confidence will be troubled. Ki kalavatzirosef beliavo. You will conclude the harvest and you'll have nothing to show for it. Hirdu shananot rigazabot echot. And so from now you should be scared, you who have such confidence. Pishota veora vachagora al chalatzayim. Because each of you will be stripped, the Navi warns them, and you will remain with your flesh revealed as you are led naked into exile. Pishota veora. Pishota means undressed. Veora means the flesh, like arum. The flesh will be revealed. v'chagora, and the belt will be al chalatzaim, removed from the waist. So the Navi is giving them a detailed description of what's waiting for them. Before we continue, Chazal have a very interesting application of this pasuk. Nashim she'ananot. Who's he talking about? These comfortable women. So the Talmud tells us that the Navi is alluding to another concept, and that is that women can really be comfortable in life. They have a lot of work, but in the distribution, in the allocation of responsibility, let's say a wife tells her husband, I'm going to work hard, you go learn for 2 hours, I'm going to work so you could learn those 2 hours. So she can be confident. She just learned 2 hours. She sent him to learn 2 hours. What did he do with the time? He walked into the Beis Medrash and a guy grabbed him and he schmoozed with him for 20 minutes. Then he went and he took a cup of coffee and it took him 15 minutes to make his cup of coffee. Then he had to go to the bathroom. It took him another 15 minutes. He's already lost an hour. Comes out of the bathroom, he sees a new guy who he hasn't seen in ages. By the time he walks into the Beis Medrash, an hour and 15 minutes has passed. He walks in, now he's really tired, he needs another cup of coffee. Poor guy, you know, he's working really hard here. So how much time did he actually learn out of all that time he came? Then he looks at the sefer and he's not so focused. So he goes out and he looks and he sees maybe there's a better print. Maybe there's another sefer. Takes out another sefer. He learns another 5 minutes, another 10 minutes. He ends up with 15 minutes out of the 2 hours that he's learned. He comes home and his wife has really been putting in the work so he could learn those 2 hours. Nashim she'ananot. The pasuk promises them, you can be comfortable with it. Your portion is sealed. You did yours. Did he do his? That's his problem, not yours. Nashim she'ananot. The pasuk says women have a greater comfort level than men. You produced, you'll get. You didn't produce, you got a problem. A woman can be more comfortable in that sense. So that's what the Talmud learned from this. Even though at first glance the pasuk's not talking about that at all, we would have never derived that from the pasuk. The pasuk is warning them, don't be so comfortable. But Chazal nonetheless told us that's an application of the pasuk. Okay, we'll pick up here next week.